You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Fran Lebowitz. Since the 1970s, she has been captivating audiences with her blend of humor, an unfiltered take on culture, politics, and her frustrations of modern life. She is, of course, an accomplished writer. And tomorrow, you can catch an evening with Fran Lebowitz at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis. Setting up our conversation with Lebowitz yesterday was pretty unique. We had to call her hotel exactly at 3 p.m., ask for her room, and be connected by phone. And you will notice the audio quality harkens to another time. She's never been a fan of technology, doesn't even have a cell phone or an email, but you will quickly learn it doesn't mask her iconic way of whipping out opinions without a genuine care if others agree. All right, Fran. Well, thank you for joining Insight. Ahead of your performance or event, rather, at the Mondavi Center, this is a return for you. You were at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis back in 2022, 2 years ago, and UC Davis described you as bringing a little bit of New York City to Yolo County. Do you feel like being a New Yorker is always with you wherever you go?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I can tell how much I hate being out of New York.
By leaving.
Yes, by leaving.
You have spent, obviously, the majority of your life in New York. I know that you were born in New Jersey. If you didn't live in New York City, if that time in your life didn't happen, do you think there's another city in the world that would have fit as well as New York for you?
I really don't think so. I mean, you know, I don't know because I can't look backwards like that, or, you know, which would then require you to look forward from like 50 years ago. I always wanted to live in New York. It's true, I grew up in New Jersey, and it was like, I'm trying to remember, like 40 miles away, but it could be 400 miles away. You know, it was so different. But from a time I was a child, we went to New York frequently. I always said, when I grow up, I'm going to live in New York.
Given that you've traveled the world time and time again, I'm curious, what is your impression of this part of California, a college city like Davis?
You know, I know I was there. I actually thought it was last year, so I have no sense of time anymore. But I'm trying to remember which. I went to a couple places. These places are north of San Francisco or south. I don't even know.
East.
Well, see, neither. And I drove from, when I say I drove, I mean I sat in the back of a car. So these are like, is it possible these places I recall, I haven't, having driven through many farms?
Lots of farms. Yolo County is definitely rural outside of a city like Davis, which is still a small city. I think the population is like 60,000 people. What I also like about...
Yeah, I thought it was beautiful. I remember thinking it was very beautiful looking, for sure. But I never go to these places thinking, you should live here, Fran. I never think that.
Given that your events, they include a healthy amount of Q&A from the audience. That sounds like fun. It also sounds like it could take a hard left or go south. What do you enjoy about that kind of spontaneity?
That is my favorite thing. That's my favorite part of it. In fact, that is probably my favorite recreational activity. I love the questions from the audience because you never know what they're going to be. And it's nice to be surprised. And, you know, I can't even guess. You know, people think you can guess from where you are, from the city you're in or the town you're in, but that isn't really always the case. So I really enjoy it. Yeah, you can get, sometimes audiences can be a little raucous. Sometimes you have an engagement that is, for instance, as I did maybe a year or two ago, you know, on a Saturday night in downtown L.A., maybe, you know, that audience is not as serene as you might want it to be. But generally, I find myself to be very entertained by it.
Yeah. I mean, I imagine just since you've been in the public for the majority of your life, I would think questions can become redundant from time to time. And it's just refreshing just to take questions from the audience.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, sometimes you get the same questions. Sometimes, you know, I mean, you often get the same questions, but you often get the same questions from actual journalists. And that is probably because there is a limit to what you could ask me about nuclear physics, but I would be unable to answer you. So people ask questions within your range of maybe not expertise, but at least knowledge.
Mm. What do you make of the fact that the turnout to go see you is still strong? I mean, people spend money. They're willing to spend an evening listening to what you have to say and engage with you.
Well, I am very grateful for this because this is how I'm able to live inside. So I don't really know why. I've actually been doing this, you know, in various forms since I was 27 and I'm 73. So, you know, I'm happy people are willing to do it. I mean, truthfully, I have been doing this, as I said, for like 50 years. But until that Netflix series came out, I only did it in the United States and Canada. But since that series came out, I do it all over the world. In fact, in a few days when I'm finishing California, I'm going to Australia.
That is definitely a flight. The Netflix series you're talking about, is that, that's the one in like 2021. It was recent.
Yeah. You know what? I think it was 2021. All I know is that it came out during the lockdown worldwide. And so apparently everyone in the world was watching Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Streaming definitely took off during that time. When it comes to the lockdown or the pandemic, how was it for you? I think that's kind of an inadequate question, but I'm genuinely curious. How was it for you?
Well, you know, I mean, well, first of all, I wasn't sick. And, you know, New York was really a deadly situation at the beginning. So, you know, you were just happy you weren't in the hospital or dead. So, you know, and you know, for me, you know, personally, it wasn't nearly as bad as it was for other people because, A, I live alone. And people, a lot of people say to me, oh, you live alone, how horrible. I thought, how could you get through this if there were other people in the apartment? So for me, at least, I was proven correct, and this is the right way to live. So in Europe, for instance, the countries in Europe and are allowed to tell people you can't leave your apartment except 1 hour a day. So obviously they can't do that here so far. And so I went out every day. There was no place to go. I didn't go inside anywhere. You know, I walked around the town all the time, mainly to make sure they didn't do things like tear down the library and build condos. You know, just checking up, making sure everything was still there. And, you know, it was, obviously it was weird. I was totally, when I say unprepared for it, I mean, I had never thought in my life once, what if there's a plague? You know, and it turned out that many people had thought that, but these are the people who read or watch science fiction. So this has apparently been on the minds of some people, but not mine. So I was completely, for the first several months, maybe even longer, I really couldn't figure out a way to think about it. I knew how I felt about it. Now, unfortunately, I know how to think about it, you know, and so it wasn't not nearly as bad for me as it was for a lot of people. But also, a lot of people that I knew left New York. They thought, we have to get out of here. I thought, why? You know, so it never even occurred to me. In fact, I did not leave New York City at all for an entire year, and I really wouldn't have noticed it if, you know, there wasn't the plague.
Being able to spend that amount of time alone is easier said than done for a lot of people, clearly not for yourself. Have you always been comfortable just being alone and being with yourself?
I have to tell you. I mean, I've always thought I'm kind of like two people. Like, on the one hand, I'm very sociable. I like to go out. I like parties. I like dinners. On the other hand, when I'm home, I want to be alone. So, you know, what I don't like is domestic life. So I don't have domestic life. I mean, domestic life usually, you know, means there's other people in the house and you have to, like, have meals and stuff with them. So, you know, it didn't bother me in the way that it would bother some people. There are people who hate to be alone, but I'm not one of those people. I really enjoy being alone. I always have, you know, so that, you know, that didn't bother me at all.
And now, I mean, obviously, it's like night and day from that time. I mean, you are, as you said, you're going to be heading to Australia for events as well. I'm curious, you've been doing this, as you say, for like 50 years. When you do these events, like the one at the Mandavi, do you have a creative process or an approach to connecting with people the way that you do? Or is it really just as simple as like showing up and being yourself?
You know what? I prepare not at all. It's perfect for me because I'm very lazy. You know, so to me, it doesn't seem like work. The work, truthfully, is a traveling, which I loathe. You know, so I just think like, you know, they pay me to get there. Because being there is something I enjoy a lot. I do not prepare at all. I mean, someone interviews me on stage. Sometimes that person is a journalist. Often they're a journalist or a writer, another kind of writer. And I don't even talk to, I mean, I might say hi backstage, but I sometimes, and very often, especially journalists, they want to talk to you before. They want to, because they want to be prepared. But I would say, ask me whatever you want. You know, if you ask me something I don't want to answer, I won't answer it. And because I also like the surprise of that. So I don't prepare at all. My preparation is coffee.
That's a good preparation. I mean, I think life obviously is like improv. It's yes and you kind of just like dive right into it. You embrace that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I like about it, really, I suppose. That's one of the things I like about it. And, you know, but I'm incredibly tired all the time because of traveling and insomnia. And so, you know, my preparation is, you know, I drink like 100 gallons of coffee backstage before I go on.
I think a lot of journalists could relate to that. You know, coffee is probably the first thing I have in the morning. I think some would think that what might help you would be being online, something digital. And I know that you're known for staying away from anything that is digital or online. You don't even have an email address. And we called you on a landline. Do you even have a cell phone?
No, I do not have one. I don't have one. I don't want one. I don't care about them. It's not a big, you know, people act like it's some sort of big moral stance or some sort of stance against technology. You know, first of all, it is entirely a lack of interest. That's really what it is. You know, I'm not interested in having one. I know they exist. I know everyone else has one. I know that my friends are very often angry at me that I have one. All kinds of people are angry at me. Like, I can't reach you. And I think, so what? You know, who am I? You know, am I the head of, you know, emergency brain surgery at New York Hospital? Let me assure you, if you have a problem, don't call me. I have no skills. So I can't help you. So why do I have to be available all the time? Why does anyone have to be available all the time? And I see people on their phones all the time. Everyone in the world, as far as I could tell, that I see is on their phone. And I don't know what they're all doing, but whatever it is, I'm not doing it. You know, I truthfully notice, for instance, that I am invariably, no matter where I am in the world, the angriest person in the airport. And that is because I'm the only person who's in the airport. Everyone else is on their phone. So they're not as angry as I am. When is a plane leaving? Why is a plane delayed? Is a plane ever going to leave? Because they're just in another place, which is their phone. Sometimes the fact that people are so in their phones makes me wonder why they're in an airport to begin with.
Yeah, their mind is somewhere else. It's already traveling away.
I mean, so for me, you know, I'm not against them. I don't care if people have them. I just don't want one.
Mm. Is there anyone else like you in your family? Where did no. Was there like a mentor or an inspiration?
No. No, for sure not. I mean, of course, my parents are not alive anymore. But I looked like my parents, but that was about it. No, there's no one I'm aware of that was like me and my family. Also, you know, I was a child in the 1950s, which was such a different era to be a child in that it's almost like saying I was a child on Saturn, you know. So that, for instance, when my first book came out, a lot of my father's friends said to me, oh, I guess you got your sense of humor from your father. And I thought, Daddy's funny. I didn't know he was funny because he would never have been that way in the house because he was the father, you know. So that my parents were very conventional, and, you know, basically this kind of thing I do now, I used to get punished for because it used to be called talking back. And so, no, I can't think of anyone in my family that I'm like.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and now it's paid dividends, you know, for decades. I mean, you are known for, you know, your social commentary and your critique, and that goes from one era to the next. This year is an election year. I know you know that. How closely are you following the presidential election?
You know, I am following it, but of course, like everyone else, it is also following me. You know, I mean, there's nothing I can say that has not been said before. I mean, and to someone who is a New Yorker, if you had told anyone, not just me, who lived in New York, like, say, before 2015, that anyone in the world would paying this kind of attention to Donald Trump, it would have been ludicrous. Ludicrous. This guy was a joke in New York, not even a good joke. No one took him seriously at all, not just as a politician, but as even a real estate developer. Everyone knew he was a fraud. It was a joke. So it is literally unimaginable that we now live in this world.
Are you a fan of President Biden?
Well, yes, compared to Donald Trump, yes. I mean, I can't say that, you know, I was always the biggest fan of Biden. You know, I wasn't. You know, Biden was always, I would say, to the right of me. Also, I did not have to be reminded of the Anita Hill hearings. I remembered them. However, I was really happy when he got the nomination, even though I did not vote for him in the primary, because I knew he could win. I mean, I thought he could win. I didn't know, obviously. The thing is that people, especially people who are young seem to imagine there's some other choices that they don't actually have. Okay, of course I'm going to vote for Biden. Does he do things I don't like? Absolutely he does. Your other choice, I keep saying to kids, your other choice is Trump. There's not some third choice where the other choice is Abraham Lincoln. Okay, so the same thing happened, you know, during the last election. I mean, the year, I guess it was 2016. In 2016, that campaign, I spent that year telling thousands of people all across the country, zero. He has zero chance of winning. Because I believe that. I didn't say it because I didn't believe it. But also, in every single place I was, someone would ask, what do you think of Bernie? And I would say, I don't like Bernie. And I would get booed by my own audience. So I came to realize my audience loved Bernie. I did not love Bernie. I didn't hate Bernie, you know. And I would say, you know what? He's not going to get the nomination. And you have to vote for Hillary Clinton. And people would say, I don't like Hillary Clinton. And I would think, so what? You don't have to like the president. You're never going to meet her. It's the idea that people should like the president, you know, is ridiculous. You only have to like your friends. You don't have to like the president.
They're not coming over for dinner.
That's right. I always say, don't worry. She's not calling you. You know, you're not going to meet her. Don't worry about it. So is there any, I mean, there may be, but are there any Democrats who would not rather have had Hillary Clinton? And if they wouldn't, then they're not Democrats. It's just stupid. Okay? Yes. There, you know, there are no ideal politicians. So that, yes, there are people, you know, I would have liked Elizabeth Warren to be the president, but I knew she wasn't going to be. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. We have two choices. Life is not a menu. Not every single thing can you say, yes, I'd like that, but please don't, you know, leave out the cilantro. You can't do that when you vote.
What do you say then to say, you know, those younger voters or just people who are just done with, you know, what they call establishment career politicians? They want change. How do you, in your view, get change?
If I was young, or I tell people who are young, you know what? You want to change? Run for something. The reason that all these politicians are so old is because people who are young don't run for things. I don't start out, obviously, if you're 22, you're not going to start out running for president, but run for city council. You know, run for local elections. And they always say, well, I don't like politics. Well, then stop complaining. This kind of idea of the world is ludicrous. If you complain about stuff and you could do anything about it, by which I mean, if you're 22 and you don't like the way politics are, the way you're going to change it is run for something. If you're 22 and you're thinking, I'm not going to vote for Biden because he did this I don't like, I'm telling you that, you know, all the things that would be really, really much, much worse if Trump was the president again will be much worse if you're 22 than if you're 73 like me. Because truthfully, I don't have that long to worry about it, but you do. And this is what astonishes me. The future is the future. The real future only exists for people who are in their 20s or 30s or whatever. I mean, young people. So if they're not going to take care of their own future, what am I supposed to do about it?
If someone is like you, a young aspiring writer, but they're having some trouble finding their voice. Are you a mentor to people who want to write, that are trying to write? Or what advice would you give someone that just is trying to find their voice and write?
Well, if you don't have a voice as a writer, I would suggest that you run for city council. I mean, here's the thing, that not everyone should be a writer. It just, you know, if you want to be a writer, write. And if you're, and you may be good and you may not be good, I can't tell from this distance, you know. But I find it, I mean, for myself. And I also, I'm really surprised the number of people who want to do things they're not good at. You know, basically, I don't enjoy doing things I'm bad at. So, I mean, the only thing I enjoy doing that I'm bad at is singing, and so I only sing in the shower. Okay, but I'm really bad at it. It never occurred to me, you know, Fran, you love to sing. You have a horrible voice. Why don't you become a singer? It's ridiculous, you know, so that...
What songs do you sing?
You know, I don't know, whatever is in my mind, but let me assure you, I have a horrible voice, okay? But it doesn't mean I don't enjoy it. Just because you like to do something doesn't mean you're good at it, you know? And if you're really bad at something, there's just certain things. Not everybody has the same abilities. People have different abilities, you know. It's also very interesting to me because when I was young, like when I first went to New York, people my age who wanted to be, other people my age who wanted to be artists, almost no one wanted to be a writer, you know. I mean, just almost no one. Everyone that I knew who was young and wanted to be an artist, they all wanted to be musicians or filmmakers because that was like the thing in the early 70s. And now all these people want to be writers. It's interesting to me that they do without having been really much of readers. I mean, what made me want to be a writer was reading. You know, so I always say to people, if you want to be a writer, read. Don't go to these writing schools. This is something I find ridiculous. I know they're all over the country, and they're very expensive, these graduate programs in writing. But you can't teach this. It's like going to tall school. You just can't teach it. It's not something you can teach or something you can learn. You know, I have a lot of friends who are writers who teach in these schools because writers don't make enough money usually to not do that. But I always say, what do you teach them? And they always say, I teach them how to read. And they always say, they should really know how to read before they're in graduate school.
Finally, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, the traveling that you've been doing at these events, I mean, it really kind of took off or picked up again, at least, you know, after the documentary on Netflix and, it, you know, during the pandemic in 2021, give or take. So that means that there's new people that are getting introduced to you. If someone were to pick up the Fran Lebowitz Reader today, 30 years since it was published, what do you hope they take away?
You know, I never thought about that. You know, I never thought about what do people, you know, I don't think of myself really as that kind of person. In other words, I hope that people enjoy reading me. You know, generally I would say that I hope people agree with me, but they almost never do. You know, sometimes they say they do, sometimes they agree with me, but I always think no one listens to me, by which I mean people listen to me, but they don't do what I tell them to do. So, you know, I have to say that I've never exactly been asked that question before. I don't really think in that way.
Well, and I like that. Fran, thank you so much for the time. It was nice chatting with you.
Thank you very much.
An Evening with Fran Lebowitz is tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis. And just a note, the Mondavi Center is a financial supporter of Cap Radio. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.